Hello, this is Paula with the Vermilion County News on Thursday, January 30th, 2020. We'll start with a story titled They Deserve a Lot, Area Children Create Valentines for Veterans, and this is written by Carol Rome in Danville. And there's a picture of Edison Elementary School fourth grader Zynia Thompson on the right reads over a Valentine card made by Braden Gore, second from left, as classmates Stephen Brigham and Willie Butler listen. A classroom of fourth graders at Edison Elementary School, as well as all the students at Schlarman Academy's North and South campuses, were hard at work Wednesday morning making dozens of Valentine cards that will end up in the hands of veterans next month. The sweet sentiments took the form of cut-out construction paper hearts, lacy paper hearts, and even springy hearts that popped up when the card was opened. Some of the cards included stickers and colorful marker and crayon drawings. I will end up with 40 cards from my class, but I'm hoping more than a couple hundred from the district, Edison fourth grade teacher Jim Rogers said. Rogers has been coordinating the Valentines for Veterans effort among the Danville District 118 schools for the last 14 years. At Schlarman, the Valentines for Veterans activity was part of the Catholic Schools Week itinerary that runs through February 7th. Creating and collecting the cards started years ago when Rogers' sister worked at the Danville Veterans Affairs. When she retired, Rogers, who is a veteran himself, continued the annual tradition with his students. I was a patient at a VA at Christmas time, right when I got out of the service, he recalled. Volunteers came around and gave us cards and gifts. I appreciated that, and I know that all the men and women will appreciate these cards. District 118 students usually make a total of several hundred cards each year. Rogers hopes to have that many when he takes the children's Valentine's to the Danville Veterans Affairs Ileana Healthcare System on February 10th. I'll at least have them there in time for Valentine's Day, he said, adding that Kenneth D. Bailey Academy students also create Valentine's Day posters that are hung up in various areas at the VA. With Valentine's Day being on a Friday this year, Rogers said he expects the cards will be distributed to veterans during the entire week. The cards will be handed out to the inpatients as well as to the outpatients who are at the VA for doctor's appointments. The card-making project isn't all about cutting out heart shapes and drawing colorful designs with markers. It is a learning opportunity to talk to the children about what a veteran is. Fourth grader Gracie Hernandez declared that she already made 5 cards. She explained she was careful not to duplicate designs and to make each card a little different. She drew a line of heart-shaped balloons on the front of one card, only to add arms and legs on the balloons in a similar illustration on the front of another card. I made these heart balloons into heart people, Gracie explained. I try to make the cards as big as I can because they deserve a lot, she said of the veterans. On yet another card, Gracie had drawn a soldier wearing fatigues. Is that me? Rogers joked with her about her soldier drawing. Sure, Gracie said unconvincingly. Fourth grader Stephen Brigham created a large card with hearts cut out from red, pink, and white paper. In the center of one of the hearts, Stephen wrote, "Thank you for serving." It looks like a bird, Stephen said of the shape of his cards. Fellow fourth grader Brooklyn Rhodes colored her card in green and brown to resemble camouflage. In the gymnasium at Schlarman's South Campus, kindergartners paired up with fifth graders and high school students to create their Valentine's Day cards for veterans. The kindergartners and fifth graders, their reading buddies, kindergarten teacher Lisa Lucas explained. The high schoolers are here helping them with their spelling. It's fun to watch them, she said of the youngsters working alongside the older students. They work well together. They have a real bond. With all of the students, Schlarman students from preschool through high school making cards, Lucas said she hopes to have hundreds of cards to take to the Danville VA. We won't turn them in until next week, she said. We've been encouraging the students to work on them at home on their own. Kindergartner Wesley White proudly showed Lucas his card that he created with high school student Jeremiah Cooper. Inside the card, it read, "Dear Veteran, thank you for fighting for us." Lucas praised Wesley. "Thank you. That's really not, That looks really nice. Someone is really going to like this. Creating the Valentine cards for veterans has been an annual activity at Schlarman for at least 9 years, according to Lucas. It's fun to watch them, and it's a good for the community too, she said. And there's another picture of Schlarman Academy fifth grader Aliyah Dean on the right helps kindergartner Jacob Matos make a heart pop-up Valentine for a veteran at the Veterans Affairs Ileana Healthcare System. Officials develop waiting on state approval, and this is written by Jennifer Bailey in Danville. As the waiting continues on approval of a Danville casino license, the Illinois Gaming Board meets today in Chicago, and its agenda includes some owner and investor information as part of Haven Gaming LLC's Danville casino application. According to the IGB's agenda for today's meeting, Haven Gaming, the developer of Danville's casino, is listed under the casino title and owner's items for initial consideration of Rule 220D1 request for waiver of two meeting rule and to amend the application, including a corrections and updates to Forms B, identification and background of ownership and investors, and in C, identification of key persons. Haven Gaming attorney Scott Seipolt said anytime there are changes, they must go before the gaming board. Seipolt called the changes minor tweaks and said their goal is to include as many minorities and women as possible for the Danville casino ownership. He said it's mostly middle-aged, balding white men who own casinos. Seipolt, who is a Native American, said the goal is to really get to 25% women and minority equity owners. They are bringing in more minorities in terms of vendors and equity piece, he said. Everybody has to be vetted, he said, adding that owners also have a background in gaming. Names and other changes have been submitted in writing and go to the board for permission. It's a new board. I think things maybe are taking a little extra time to review, Seipolt said. It's all moving forward. I literally work on this every single day. Our ducks are completely in a row. Attorney for casino developer Haven Gaming on working on the casino plans about 6 days a week. About the IGB. The casino license application processes in Waukegan and Rockford have seen lawsuits, and there are issues involving other applications, he said. We're really the only ones picked unanimously, Seipolt said about Danville City Council approval. We're selling through. It's been great, he added, of the license application process. Another issue across the border in Indiana is the race to see if Danville or Terre Haute, Indiana casino opens first, but the Indiana casino has been put on hold due to an investigation into a firm that worked with Terre Haute's chosen casino operator, possibly violating campaign finance rules. It's an extremely serious allegation, Seipolt said. Seipolt said they're staying focused on the Danville casino and on the positive and what they can do and bring to the community. We're going to be one of the major economic engines for Danville and the entire area, he said. We want to really do great things for the organizations that we mentioned, he said, about helping the Fisher Theater, Boys and Girls Club, and others. We're excited to start investing in and with the Danville community. He said he wished he had a crystal ball to see when an application decision will be made, but that hasn't stopped the plans. It's all moving forward. I literally work on this thing every single day. He said about working on the casino plans about 6 days a week. Our ducks are completely in a row. He said with a potential of 1,200 jobs, they are continuing to look at getting managers and interviewing and vetting people to get to know them and have the team in place. There also are always new equipment, slots, and other things that they are constantly researching. Haven officials also continue to talk with community entities such as Danville Area Community College and the Boys and Girls Club In a way, it's kind of a double-edged sword, Seipholz said about the IGB moving slowly. Going slower can be an advantage to hire people and get things in line. He said they didn't have a lot of time to apply for the license, rushing to work with the city of Danville and to get the application in. We have a great package and are filling in the team, he said again. We're extremely excited about Danville and excited about Vermilion County. I love the area. I love the topography. I love the history. I look very much forward in becoming a part of the community, he said. In addition, on Tuesday, Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. posted on social media that he receives constant questions about the casino, so he gave a brief update. The IGB has up to 12 months until September 30th of 2020 to award licenses, and we are in a holding pattern until then. I am pleased to report, though, that we have received two inquiries from them about the project, which means they are at least actively reviewing it. In the meantime, Haven Gaming engineers continue design work so that we will be shovel-ready by the time we receive official acceptance. You'll also be really pleased to know that I have fielded calls from several upscale restaurants in the Chicago area that are chomping at the bit to come here upon receipt of the license. We'll run through the obituaries. Leo J. Milius, 86 of Bismarck, Illinois, passed away at 1:23 p.m. on Tuesday, January 28, 2020, at Autumn Trace in Attica, Indiana. A celebration of Leo's life will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, February 1st, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville, with Pastor Bruce Thornsboro officiating. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, January 31st, at the funeral home. He will be laid to rest in Walnut Corner Cemetery with military rites conducted by American Legion Post 210 of Danville. Memorial donations may be given in his name to Emmanuel Lutheran Church. Aaron R. Cooper, 56, passed away January 23rd, 2020, at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville. She's originally from Danville. A memorial visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. Friday, January 31st, at Southside Church of Christ at 6611 South 4th Street in Danville. Memorial service will be at 11 a.m. Friday, January 31st, at Southside Church of Christ, with the Pastor Kevin Ziegler officiating. David Arthur Doggett, 95 of Danville, passed away Saturday, January 25th. Visitation will be from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Thursday, January 30th, at Kruger Combe Pape Funeral Home at 10 East William Street in Danville. Service will follow at 11:30 Thursday at the funeral home, with Pastor Ramey Gordon officiating. Entombment will follow at Spring Hill Cemetery with military honors by American Legion Post 210. Charlene Chucky Mae Hickman, 78 of Potomac, passed away at 6:21 p.m. Saturday, January 25th, at Singing River Hospital in Pensacola, Mississippi. A celebration of Charlene Hackman's life will be at 1 p.m. Saturday, February 1st, at Community Church of God in Danville. Visitation will precede the service from 11 to 1 p.m. Saturday at the church. She will be laid to rest following the service in Potomac Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the Community Church of God Mission Fund. Gladys Diane Sexton Boland, 65 of Rules, Hillsboro, died at 5:35 a.m. EST time Wednesday, January 29th, in her residence. Cremation will take place. A memorial service will be at 4 p.m. EST time Saturday, February 8th, at Hedrick Church of God, with David Sheetwood officiating. Contributions may be made to PSP, Progressive Supranuclear Palsy, or Hedrick Church of God. Maurice Dion Lewis from Danville passed away Thursday, January 23rd, 2020. Visitation with family and friends will be at 11 a.m. to noon Friday, January 31st, at Lighthouse World Ministries at 949 North Walnut Street in Danville, with a memorial service immediately following at noon. Jacqueline Jackie Lewis, 83 of Danville, passed away January 26th at her home. Funeral services will be at 1 p.m. Saturday, February 1st at Trinity Lutheran Church at 824 Main Street in Danville. Pastor Kent Tibben will officiate. Burial will be in Lutheran Cemetery. Visitation will be from 3 to 7 p.m. Friday, January 31st at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Memorials may be made in Jackie's memory to Trinity Lutheran Church or Amadillis Foundation. Marvin Eugene Laker, 73, of Danville, passed away Sunday, January 26th at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Visitation will be from 11 to 1 p.m. Friday, January 31st at Kruger Cone Pape Funeral Home, 10 East William Street in Danville. Service will follow at 1 p.m. Friday at the funeral home with Pastor Ramey Gordon officiating. Burial will follow at Atherton Cemetery. Anthony D. Jones, 60, of Danville, died at 11:02 a.m. Thursday, January 23rd, at home. Funeral services will be at noon Saturday at New Life Church of Faith, 1419 North Bowman Avenue in Danville. Pastor Frank McCullough will officiate. Burial of the Army veteran will be at 10 a.m. Monday in Danville National Cemetery. In Danville, visitation will be from 10 to noon on Saturday at the church. Richard Wayne Sanford, 61, of Danville, died at 11:23 a.m. Thursday, January 28th, at home. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Lincoln Sons Funeral Home in Danville. Michael Turner, 72, of Atwood, died at 9:30 a.m. Wednesday, January 29th, at home. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Hines Funeral Home in Bement. Okay, the next story is titled Donuts Blends with Timely Messages, and this is written by Mary Wyckoff in Danville, and there's a picture from left to right of Jamie Cowton, Anthony Smith, and Lisa Strain rehearse a scene from Red Mass Players' Superior Donuts. The drama comedy opens on Friday. Underneath the gritty reality, a beautiful message unfolds in Red Mass Players' Superior Donuts. It takes you on a journey, said Christian Cunningham, 24, who plays Franco in one of the lead roles. It's a beautiful message about coming together regardless of your race or background. The play will be presented this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and February 7th, 8th, and 9th at the Catherine Randolph Theater at 601 North Vermilion Street. Friday and Saturday shows are at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday shows are at 2 p.m. Director Nancy Henderson said the play has a dramatic storyline, but there's a lot of comedy too. It's funny and witty. It's about people and relationships. She added, it has a message. You need to know another person's story before you make a judgment. The play stars Cunningham as Franco and Andrew Peters as Arthur. Supporting casts include Tim Kirby, Lisa Strain, Anthony Smith, Jamie Cowton, Chad Myler, Cody Shadley, and Jason Assad. A couple of the characters speak Russian. Their strong language, a fight scene, and simulated drug use. Arthur is a hermetic donut store owner in Chicago's uptown. Franco, a young African-American man, responds to his help wanted sign. Unfortunately, Franco has a shameful secret beneath his affable exterior, and he's going to bring it with him to the shop. Although they have little in common, their relationship evolves from strangers to friends. Like a Norman Lear classic sitcom, the play mixes smart jokes and social commentary. Franco's connection with unsavory characters results in a fight scene between Arthur and one of the mobsters. To make it realistic, Red Mask brought in professional fight choreographer Steve Weisgarver from Chicago. Weisgarver choreographed the fight in Beauty and the Beast for DLO Musical Theater, but this one is more complicated. We certainly haven't done something like this at Red Mass before, Henderson said. Cunningham said the fight scene, the actors are amazing. It feels like a real fight. You almost feel uncomfortable in a way. As the play progresses, Arthur and Franco build a relationship. Cunningham said they come to love each other and become family. It pulls at our heart at times. That positive message where people accept each other, although they're different, is something that's needed right now in the world, he said. Cunningham has been in other plays, but this is his first Red Mask play. Henderson asked him to audition, and after reading the script, he said he would love to do the show. I connected to the show in so many ways, he said. For example, his character dresses in urban clothing, which is how Cunningham likes to dress, including wearing snapback hats. Also, his character connects with Arthur, an older man, and that reminds Cunningham of his relationship with mentors such as Pastor Archie Neal at Life Church, where Cunningham works. Although a lot of people know Cunningham as a singer, he said he sings only snatches of songs in the play. I really want people to see me in a different aspect of my work, he said. Cunningham is working toward a degree in music education with a minor in biblical studies through Southeast University in Lakeland, Florida. Henderson noted that Royal Donut is supplying day-old donuts and equipment for use in the play, and DP Supply Incorporated Danville Paper is lending a coffee maker, napkin holders, and other items for the donut shop. Superior Donuts is the second production of Red Mask's 83rd season. Next story, kitchen fire damages home, and this is written by a staff reporter in Danville. A grease fire Monday morning caused damage to a kitchen in excess of $10,000. Danville firefighters received a call on a kitchen fire at 11:36 a.m. in the 900 block of Skyline Drive. Upon arrival, flames and smoke were showing, with a light amount of smoke coming up from the front door, according to Captain Aaron Marcotte. Personnel assisted getting occupants out of the home, with one woman receiving oxygen as a result. She then refused going to the hospital. Marcotte said the fire was quickly extinguished, but a few hot spots had to be taken care of and the house needed to be ventilated. The fire, the result of cooking food on the stove, did damage to cabinets and the ceiling above the stove. Estimates included damages of $10,000 to the building, with another $3,000 to the contents. No firefighters were injured and were clear from the scene by 12:09 p.m. Okay, the next story is titled Salt Fork Student Have Much to Celebrate Tonight, and this is written by Bob Asmussen and Catlin. Katie Fritch doesn't remember what happened to her on January 16th. The Salt Fork High School senior has no memory of collapsing in the school's cafeteria or the quick thinking, life-saving actions of those around her. I had to have friends tell me what happened, she said. It started as a typical school day for Fritz, an active straight-A student. She drove her younger sister, Olivia, a freshman, to the building and followed her routine. Fritz wasn't feeling well in the morning, so she took Tylenol, then went about her day. At lunchtime, without warning, everything changed. Fritz had a cardiac event and fell over. Salt Fork school nurse Jenny Burge was paged at 12:22 p.m. and rushed to her aid. Fritz stopped breathing. Burge immediately began administering CPR. Burge needed the school's AED automated external defibrillator. Salt Fork Superintendent Phil Cox ran to get the device. We're sitting there looking at a student that we care about, wondering what the outcome is going to be, Cox said, especially when the nurse says the words she doesn't have a pulse. Burge put the AED pads on Fritz. She shocked her the first time, then resumed compressions. Catlin Police Officer Tad Batto arrived and began to assist sister. The AED called for a second shock, which helped restore Fritz's heart rhythm. Salt Fork girls basketball coach Brian Russell kept talking to Fritz, encouraging her. You got to stay with us. You've got to fight, Russell recalled saying. The device called for a third shock, and it worked. I will never forget. I could feel the heart beating after we got her back. Got it back, Birch said. Cox has been in education for 18 years and has never been the AED used. Same for Birch. Out in the community, this is my first save. This is my first time, she said. They say adrenaline kicks in and training kicks in. Paramedics came and Fritz was taken to Urbana's Carl Foundation Hospital. She was later moved to OSF Medical Center in Peoria. Burge stayed in touch with the family as Fritz was treated. There were a few scary moments early, but soon the prognosis turned more positive. Fritz was diagnosed with prolonged QT syndrome type 2. It's a congenital disorder that Fritz didn't realize she had. Fritz was implanted with an internal defibrillator and is on heart medication. She won't be able to continue her sports career. She played basketball and ran track and cross country for the Storm. Being in excellent physical shape helped Fritz survive. Happy outcome. Fritz, 16, returned to school Wednesday for the first time since January 16th. I'm incredibly fortunate, Fritz said. I'm very thankful and consistent of one emotion, and that's gratitude for Mrs. Burge. I can honestly say she saved my life. At 6:30 p.m. Thursday, Fritz will be honored during the senior night basketball game against Chrisman. I would assume emotions are going to be pretty high, Katie's dad, Jared, Fritz said. Just to be in the moment, to again recognize how close we came to not having a senior night, that's what really starts to get at you. A pediatric cardiologist from Carle will publicly recognize Burge. We're grateful that all of the staff reacted quickly, and that Jenny was absolutely amazing in how she handled the situation, saving her life, Cox said. We're so excited to have Katie coming back to school. Burge, who lives in Catlin, has been at Salt Fork for 11 years and a nurse for 15. She is a CPR instructor. She's also trying to process what happened on January 16th. It doesn't seem real, she said. She's close to the Salt Fork students. These are my babies, she said. I've had these kids since kindergarten. I know their moms, I know their dads, I know their siblings. Our kids play sports together. Everybody knows everybody. Burge saw Fritz last Friday for the first time since the incident. I just kept hugging her and hugging her and hugging her, Burge said. Of course, I was crying. I told her, you're meant to do great things. You're a miracle. Fritz called it an amazing moment. What did she say to Burge? I told her, thank you. You saved my life. Jared and Wendy Fritz are grateful for Burge, Cox, Russell, and anyone else who helped save their daughter. This outcome is truly in the hands of the first responders doing the right things immediately and really assessing the situation, Jared Fritz said. A lot of folks aren't that lucky. You can't underscore the value of training and preparation. The Fritz family struggled to figure out the way of properly thanking the first responders. My wife and I settled on flowers and an angel figurine for Jenny because she really is my kid's guardian angel, Jared Fritz said. You can't say thank you enough. You just can't do enough. Fritz will continue to attend basketball games. She remains a loyal supporter. She participates in the school's drama club and plays trombone in the band. After graduating, she's going to the University of Florida in Tampa. She wants to work with kids at Shriners Hospital as a prosthetic and orthotic physical therapist. There's nothing that can compare to saving a life, she said. The only thing that I can do is get through college and hopefully change the lives of my own. The health scare has her thinking about what is truly important. Don't worry about the petty things today of day-to-day life, she said. You have to see things in the picture, and you have to be able to let negativity toward others go. In the grand scheme of things, when it becomes life or death, it really doesn't matter. Just one quick community brief. Memorial planned. A gospel memorial service will begin at 6 p.m. on Friday at Mount Olive Baptist Church, 428 North Washington Street, in memory of the three Danville men found dead in an Elm Street residence last week. Pastor Frank McCullough said many gospel groups are scheduled to attend. All are welcome. So that'll be it for Thursday, January 30th, 2020. Still not seeing any sun out there, but hopefully in the next couple of days we will. I hope you all have a good week, and hopefully I'll see you again next week. Bye. Take care.